Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
A big thanks to the two Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment. It is Wednesday, March 13th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Ruby Walsh joins us with the latest on day two of the Cheltenham Festival. We have a feast of Gaelic games this evening. Nadine Doherty previews this weekend's Ladies National Football League action. Aoife Murray has her eye on the Camogie League. And Damien Lawler brings us the latest stories off the pitch. And if that wasn't enough, RT Sport Online journalist Raph Diallo is in studio to chat Association Football. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Well, the eve, I guess, Falter Riv on show. Before we get chatting, it's competition time again. This week here on Game On, we have an incredible prize from AXA to give away. You and three of your friends could win a trip to see Liverpool's women's team take on Chelsea at Prenton Park. It's all part of AXA's Being a Woman Shouldn't Be a Risk campaign. And across 2FM this week, we've been featuring stories of women who've turned up challenges into triumphs. And thanks to AXA, you could win four hospitality match tickets to see Liverpool women's home game at Prenton Park against Chelsea on Sunday, April 28, plus €2,000 to cover your flights and hotel for a chance to get your name into Friday's draw for this amazing prize. Just answer the following question. Katie McCabe is the captain of which London club? If you know the answer, well, text the word AXA, your answer, name and email address to 51552, and later on we'll pick one person randomly and their name will go into Friday's draw for that amazing, amazing prize. As always, RT competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all of the details. Now, only one place to start. A dramatic day at Cheltenham. A little bit earlier, just before we came on air, I caught up with Ruby Walsh. And why was it a dramatic day? Well, because Captain Guinness came out on top in a breathtaking renewal of the Betway Queen Mother Champion Chase at the Cheltenham Festival, in which red-hot favourite El Fabiolo was pulled up.
Edward Stone leading now towards fence number 5. Fernando Cibola is up on the outside. Close up, and El Fabiolo makes a terrible mistake. And that's him done for, surely. He's survived the error, but a terrible blunder by the hot favourite El Fabiolo. And he is not being asked to continue in the race. He is being pulled up. A stunning, stunning development. The hottest favourite of the week has made a terrible blunder and has put himself out of the contest. Captain Guinness and Rachel Blackmore all out. Gentleman Demays just a length away, but Captain Guinness is the winner of the champion chase. Rachel Blackmore does not care. It's yet another big race to come her way.
Well, I knew he was, I could see him or hear him or make the mistake beside me, so I knew he was kind of out of the equation then. So yeah, your thinking changes, I suppose, but it was it happened quite early on, so we still had a long way to go, but yeah, you're still just trying to ride from fence to fence. Yeah, it was a long way up the hill at the same time after the last. I was glad we got to the line.
So there are the thoughts of Rachel Blackmore. Ruby, we've heard how it played out. We've heard from Rachel there as well. What was it like being there, being witness to such drama?
Such drama is right. And it was like someone stuck a pin in Cheltenham initially as El Fabiolo made that mistake at the fifth fence that he couldn't recover from. And Paul Townend did the right thing straight away. Shane pulled the horse up. And then they were looking, thinking, what's going to happen? And my eyes were drawn to Gentleman to me. Captain Guinness was always travelling well. And obviously you had Edward Stone in front who looked to be struggling on the ground. He ended up tipping up at the second last. And then it was left to Rachel Blackmore and Captain Guinness. And Mick, what a career. I mean, that's her 16th Cheltenham Festival victory, I think. But Champion Hurdles and Honeysuckles, Gold Cups at Blue Tar, Champion Chase, Captain Guinness, Grand National and Manila Times. Like, there's not exactly many big races left that Rachel Blackmore hasn't won. And incredible and wonderful to watch. And, like, every sport needs a story and needs a headline star. And we're lucky to have Willie Mullins and Paul Townend and Gordon Elliott and Jack Kennedy. But whatever Rachel Blackmore does, just succeeds, whatever those gentlemen do.
Absolutely incredible is certainly the word for Rachel Blackmore and the success that she has had, and long may that success continue. If we go back to the start of the day, Ballyburn, Factophile, two favourites, they were both winners. Has it been an entertaining day for you, Ruby?
Yeah, it has, and it's been a good day. I mean, Ballyburn was really good in the first race. He looked like an absolute machine. How he went through the race, the way he quickened up, the authority he had, and the future just looked so, so bright for him. And then you had Factophile in the Brown Advisory Novice Chase. It was a bit buzzy, a bit gassy early on. Mark Walsh did really well on him, and I don't mean this in any kind of a, not even derogatory way, but for Paul Townend, with winners ridden and the confidence that he has to go and deliver on Ballyburn, there was a lot more pressure on Mark. He isn't the same winners ridden here. And for to give Factophile such a good ride, and you know, that was winner number 99 at the Cheltenham Festival, Shane, for Willie Mullins, and that's a number I don't think anybody ever thought anybody would get to. I most certainly didn't think it. I suppose when I first came to Cheltenham for Willie in 96, he turned his second Cheltenham winner with Wither or Witch that year. Florida Pearl was his third in 97. In 98, Florida Pearl made it number four, and Alexander Banquet made it number five. To think back then that he'd be on 99 now, it's just incredible. By the close of play of the season, maybe he could be on 100, although as I stand here looking at the bumper, it looks like Gordon Elliott's going to win the bumper. Jalen Dudare, Patrick is the only chance Willie has. He's coming on the outside, but Gordon's too. I would be fitting if Patrick Mullins was to ride Willie Mullins is 100, but it doesn't look like it right this minute in time, although he's getting there.
We have live commentary, Ruby. Take it away.
Yeah, this will be fitting if Patrick Mullins brings up the 100 for his dad, and he's going to. Go on, Patrick. Go on, Paddy. Yeah. 100 for Willie Mullins, ridden by his son.
That's brilliant.
That's fitting.
That's brilliant.
That is fitting, so it is. Yeah, brilliant.
I can hear it in your voice, Ruby. You're delighted.
Yeah, it is. It's some achievement, Shane. I mean, look, people look at Willie Mullins now and they look at the dominance, and all you hear is people kind of moaning and giving out. But I was there, not at the beginning. I wasn't there. I was in school when Tourist Attraction won. But I've been there since. I've been from number two to number 100. When we came in 98, myself and David Casey were flown to Stansted, and Jackie Mullins' father picked us up and brought us to Cheltenham from Stansted because the budget didn't extend to flights to Birmingham. It's something that has been built from the very bottom, and I just think it's off the charts. This is like you talk about management, and you look at different coaches and different sports, and they talk about Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola and go back for Kenny Dalglish and people like that. But Willie Mullins is doing with his team offices and can you look at what happened is up there with the ball. And I know I have 2 feet in the camp and I appreciate it and respect it, but what he's achieving is unbelievable.
It's devotion as well, isn't it? It's proper devoting your life to the cause.
It's passion. Absolute passion. And like, he's building those businesses. You look at Pep Guardiola, he's on a huge salary with Manchester City and getting paid to do it. This fella's put all his own money into it and built it from the bottom to the top. It is just unbelievable.
It most certainly is. And what a fitting way to almost end the day. And it's great to hear you say that it was an entertaining day, because at the start of the day, and judging by the scenes of chaos in the car park last night, I mean, we woke up to the cross-country course being abandoned, John Bond being pulled. Were you concerned that it could have been a quite chaotic day?
A little bit, I suppose. But I looked at the car parks and I'm thinking, like, hang on, there's 60,000 people going to an event. Did you ever look picnic when it rains? You can't get out of it for 3 days. So those are pictures. That's just the world we live in now, Shane. That's social media and influence out whatever line they want, be it negativity or positivity. And I'm standing in the parade ring here now, and there is a swarm of people stood around Willie Mullins with phones in the air taking pictures of him. I think this is the years of what he's achieved, but this is...
Most certainly is, Ruby. And not too long ago, we were here in the studio and Alan Colley posed the question to you of why aren't Willie's horses winning at the moment? Patience is key here, Ruby.
It's like everything, Shane. He knows what to do, how to do it. And look, I play a tiny part in it. I'm stood in the ring here with David Casey, and he the same. He plays a bigger part than I. This is a monumental achievement. I think it is. What do you think, Cass?
Yeah, I think it's...
Hang on. It'll be very, very hard to repeat ever. There you are. Casey even thinks no one else will ever do it.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Ruby, I do want to let you go. Enjoy the celebrations. Just very briefly, what are you most looking forward to tomorrow?
Tomorrow, what are we most looking forward to? Fasal Vega?
Fasal
Vega and Jay DeGruji. We got that from the very inside. That's from David Casey.
That's from the horse's mouth, quite literally.
Yeah.
Listen, Ruby, I'll let you go. Enjoy the celebrations. What a fitting evening for Willie Mullins. Ruby, thanks so much for taking the call.
No, thank you. Bye-bye.
RTE 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Before we get stuck into a feast of Gaelic Games chat, it is time to chat soccer. Raf Diallo from RT Sport is alongside me. Raf, how's the form?
Not too bad now. Yeah, after a long, grueling night of watching Arsenal and Porto.
I was going to say, did you stick with it?
I did. I was doing the match updates for the website.
So I had to.
I couldn't go anywhere. So I was planted in front of the TV, kind of going through it. But in a way, you know, it was entertaining in its own way. Very tense. Like I didn't really have a horse in the race per se. But yeah, it was just it was a psychological test for Arsenal in the sense of trying to get over that. I mean, they had a sort of one like that against Brentford, because at the start of this year they've been on such a great run. You know, they've been blasting teams out of the way. Since the start of January, after they got knocked out of the FA Cup by Liverpool. And Porto are that kind of awkward team that are difficult to play against. They've, you know, personified by Pepe at the back.
A bit of bite about them.
A little, yeah.
Is that the polite way to say it?
Yeah, a little bit of bite about them indeed. You know, they make it hard. Even their manager sort of exemplifies that a little bit, Sergio Conceição. But Arsenal had the little breakthrough just before halftime with Martin Odegaard slipping a lovely ball in, some twinkle toes before that as well to Leandro Trossard. And, you know, he finished brilliantly as well. And you thought Arsenal would push on from there, but Porto are, you know, they're masters at this sort of the last 16 level of the Champions League, despite the problems they have off the pitch and even their squad. It's not a, you know, it's not a top level. You know, Arsenal have a better squad, but they're, you know, they have the experience to make it very difficult for teams. But, you know, it came down to a penalty shootout in the end. And David Raya, who, you know, there was a bit of focus on at the start of the season when he came in place of Aaron Ramsdale, and yet he's sort of eased in now. You know, his distribution from the back is very, you know, it's not as shaky as Ramsdale. Ramsdale's pretty good at that as well, but it's a confidence thing, because we saw what it's like for Ramsdale having sat out, you know, weeks on end on Saturday against Brentford, where he did get caught out, and that sort of shines a light on just how good Raya has been, and then he slotted back in perfectly and made the difference in the shootout itself.
Yeah, man of the match as well. And it was great. And it was actually, do you know what was really good to see? Maybe this is just with my Union hat on, but Aaron Ramsdale was over protecting, making sure no one was going over to see David Raya, and when he was being sitting with his goalkeeping coach to see before the penalty shootout how the Porto players are going to take it as well. So it's good to see that camaraderie there.
Indeed.
That's a friendly rivalry,
and
two great saves in a match that extra time wasn't great. I don't think there was a shot on target in extra time.
No, not really. I think it was more, I think as it was said by Richie Sadler, two teams that are trying not to lose as opposed to really go for it.
Absolutely. Barcelona had a good win over Napoli. So Arsenal and Barcelona joined Manchester City, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich and PSG for the quarterfinal draw, which is on Friday. But who will join them? Atletico Madrid, Inter Milan, Borussia Dortmund or PSV? So Atletico Madrid host Inter Milan this evening. Inter have a 1-0 lead in that one. Are we allowed to call it Diego Simeone derby?
You can, he has a history with both clubs, and the one thing, Atletico Madrid in comparison to Inter, who have been brilliant in Serie A this season and are 16 points clear Juventus, they're easily going to win the title. They have a brilliant team as well. Simone Inzaghi has them really well set up. If you look at their favourite 11, you know, it's more a team that's better than the sum of its parts. I mean, you have Jan Sommer, the Swiss goalkeeper, you know, he's a solid keeper, but you know, Onana was the one that Man United went and got because he's a, you know, a flashy option. But you look at Benjamin Pavard, a World Cup winner, De Vrij at the back, Bastoni, then the wing backs, either Dumfries or Darmian on the right, Federico Di Marco, who came through the academy and sort of the local Milanese player in there, and then a midfield that is on paper not defensive when you look at Barella, Mkhitaryan and Çalhanoğlu, but Simone Inzaghi has turned these sort of more attack minded midfielders into deep lying playmakers, so they can sit back and they then allow the wide centre backs to actually get forward and the wing backs too. So as much as they're defensively brilliant, they do carry a threat up front. And of course, they have Marcus Thuram, son of the great Lilian Thuram, running the channels. And then Lautaro Martinez, the captain, who is brilliant as well. So Inter will be confident that they can go to Atletico Madrid and get the job done. And I mean, it's weird to talk about them as dark horses when they got to the final last year. It will be tough though, because Atletico, as much as they have difficulties away from home in La Liga, they are really, really good at home, both in the Champions League and also domestically as well. You know, they're the way we were talking about Porto, Atletico Madrid are sort of a prime example of how good it can get, that style of football.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned there, Inter one up on aggregate. One apiece between Dortmund and PSV, so there was nothing to separate the two sides in Holland in the first round. You would imagine it's going to be more of the same this evening?
Yeah, it'll be tight. PSV are going really well in the Dutch league. I think they'll have that wrapped up soon enough. Borussia Dortmund, their challenge in the Bundesliga is just trying to qualify for next season's Champions League. But you would probably favour them in front of the yellow wall at home. But the one thing, the winner of that tie, you would expect that's the team that the six teams and the winner from Atletico Inter, that's who they would want to get in the quarterfinal draw on Friday.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. No, I was, yeah, Tino, it was on paper the two weakest teams, Dortmund and PSV. So good to see some big names in the draw on Friday, which will be done by a human. I believe the next Champions League draws.
Yeah, next Champions League draw.
Robotic.
They're moving to the Swiss model for the opening stage next season, because it's 36 teams and it's not done as a group. It's going to be one big league, and there's an increased number of group stage games, but it just makes it much more complicated. And I'm not going to try and explain it live here, but
it's been done by a robot. I think they scoffed at the idea of the draft.
It would have taken 3 or 4 hours if they were doing it by human. Human means.
Okay. Slippery slope, Raph. Yeah. It's a slippery slope.
Changing times.
One match in the English Premier League this evening, Bournemouth Luton. Of course, that's the match that was rescheduled.
Yeah, so this one was actually about two-thirds of the game was played on December 16th, but then it was abandoned because, of course, Tom Lockyer, the Luton Town captain, he collapsed after a cardiac arrest during the game. And this was his second collapse, because he had collapsed during the playoff final when they were coming up against Coventry City at Wembley. But he has since had an implantable cardioverter defibrillator fitted, and whether he comes back or not, we don't know. But the emotions around this game are all around that. I think we're all delighted, at least, that, you know, he's up about and you know, that he's alive, basically.
Absolutely,
so that's really been the narrative around the game. And then from an Irish perspective as well, we'll see the team news probably before we leave tonight, but whether Chidozie Ogbeni starts or not, and hopefully comes through the game as well, because John O'Shea has a very important decisions to make, and I think that that's one of the more easier ones in terms of who's going to be in a squad.
Yeah, so we're expecting, well, we're hoping Chidozie plays this evening, obviously, in the Premier League. We're expecting him to be named in John O'Shea's his first Ireland team that he's announcing tomorrow. Are we expecting some first time call ups elsewhere?
Jake O'Brien is probably the one first time call up. I think we might be sure about. So he's a Corkman playing in France for Lyon, who are a big club in when it comes to French football, but are struggling badly this season, although it looks like they're pulling through in terms of the relegation battle. But the one good thing about Jake O'Brien, he's getting so much game time, 18 starts, and doesn't look out of place. The other call-up, and it's not a first-time call-up because he's been in the squad before, he just hasn't played yet, is Sammy Smodix, who has 27 goals in all competitions for Blackburn this season. Really, really shining in the Championship this year. And there had been a worry that potentially Hungary, the other team he's eligible for, because he has an Irish grandmother, but he also has a Hungarian grandmother, but that Hungary, with the Euros coming up, might be interested in him. As it turns out, it's that doesn't look like it's going to happen. I think he's going to be within our fold, because the Hungary manager, Marco Rossi, and now this is a translation that probably hasn't been translated brilliantly, but in Smodix's case, it was very unpleasant to know who could tell the Irish media about his invitation after I inquired with him about whether he would be included in the Hungarian national team. And that's, of course, Rossi there.
Right.
It was either him or his manager. And for what purpose? To be invited to the Irish national team. We don't need such a person, even if he is a technically good player. That's kind of blunt. So
okay.
I think that ship has sailed, and he's trapped within our system now forever.
Okay, well, that's good. It's good that we have him.
Yeah,
it's good that we have him. And of course, we play Hungary as well. So in the not too distant future. So it's going to be not nice to see. There's already going to be a bit of bite to that one. Okay, listen, Raph, you're sticking around, and hopefully we do get some team news from Bournemouth Luton, with of course the Irish interest in Chidozie Ogbeni hopefully starting.
Game on.
GAA.
Now joining us with all the latest Gaelic Games stories is RTÉ Sport Gaelic Games journalist Damien Lawler. Damien, let us begin our conversation chatting about referees, because listen, at the start of the league campaign there was a bit of negative news around referees not passing fitness tests, the availability of referees. However, Westmead seem to have bucked the trend completely, and they're recruiting a heap of referees, Damien.
So it's a crisis at national level, Shane. There's no point in saying otherwise. Counties have, I suppose, frequently expressed their concern at the decline in numbers at a shocking rate of referees in the county, to such an extent that certain games have not gone ahead in counties. And just as a snapshot, Shane, in the last few months alone, Tipperary, Leitrim, Wicklow, Mayo have all spoken out. The Mayo chairperson, Seamus Toohey, has recommended a levy on clubs that don't come forward with referees. Tipperary reported then that only 70% of their clubs are providing referees. So a shortage right across the board. This has been going on for some time. A lot of attention drawn to the abuse that match officials get, certainly at underage level, but across all levels, really. And I think a massive, massive fall-off in people looking to referee. Westmead have booked the trend. They've unveiled 58 new referees to be formally presented with new jerseys and new kit on Friday night. And the reason I mentioned the gear is they'll be given a special kind of a special gear, special jersey. It's a bit like maybe a trainee guard, a guard of reserve before you qualify for the force. You have a form of uniform. This shirt that they wear will signify that they're still in that developmental stage. And I think the message is clear there. We're new. You know, give us a chance here. We want to progress up the ranks and we're learning our trade. But they'll come into operation at under 12 level this coming year, Shane. And what you mightn't say that's too dramatic of a development, but it really bucks the national trend. And a couple of things too about it. 9 advisors are being put forward by Westmead GAA. In-house seminars and pitch sessions are being conducted by the likes of Barry Kelly, the former All-Ireland referee, Brian Crow, the Cavan referee, and John Keenan will be there, last year's All-Ireland final referee in hurling, will be there on Friday night. So it's a major development. It's a swim against the tide in terms of reflecting the national trend as well, Shane.
You mentioned some current referees there. I believe you were speaking to a former inter-county referee, a man who's refed at the highest level in a couple of All-Ireland finals in the past, Barry Kelly. And Barry, I suppose, is expanding the conversation on what is exactly happening in Westmead.
Both Peter Collins, the Westmead Minor Board Secretary, and Sean Sheridan, the referee's coordinator, looked at the fact that we'd have 300 extra games to fix with the even age groups. Obviously, we're gone now from 13, 15, 17 to 12, 14, 16, 18, and we'd struggle to fill them all with existing referees. So we kind of, I suppose, through a mixture of encouragement and coercion, we got clubs to give 2 people each to do a referees course, which 58 referees did a referees course, both online and in person. Brian Crow from Cavan, the former Ireland referee, Niall Ward, one of our own referees, and myself, we gave referees courses in Mullingar and Athlone about a fortnight ago. Then the referees, 58 referees, would have completed an online exam. And this Friday night, we have former Westmead referee Paddy Collins, a referee for Ireland football finals in the 70s and 80s, and last year's Ireland hurling final referee John Keenan, are presenting these newly commissioned jerseys. I suppose the jerseys are, in a way, similar to perhaps the Armagh GAA jersey, and it's kind of an indicator to the clubs that these are new, kind of, I suppose, novice or learner referees, and that wearing these jerseys is, I suppose, akin to an L or an N plate on a driver, is that, you know, a bit more consideration. And we're encouraging clubs, obviously, to allow them a bit of latitude because it's their first step into the refereeing game. And we're just hoping that of the 58 new referees, that if we could get 10 or 15 of those to do it for 4, 5, 6 years, perhaps even more, would really ease the pressure and perhaps encourage other people to follow the refereeing path as well. So we're looking forward to Friday night in the Ambrook Hotel. It's 7:30, a launch, and county board officials and, as I said, the guest of honour, and we're just hoping that maybe other counties might follow if ours work successfully. As I said, it was a mixture of if you don't give referees, you don't have home games under 12, and then also we really do need every club to supply a referee. So hopefully it'll go well on Friday night, and if it'll go well, then these new referees will be out refereeing matches under 12 level next week, Damien. So we wish them the best of luck.
So that was former inter-county referee Barry Kelly. And listen, Damien, it will be certainly welcomed to see the increase in referees, and hopefully that this isn't just a Westmeath thing, that this is expanded across the country. Moving on, we have been chatting in the past few weeks about a couple of Gaelic players attempting to get NFL contracts. And I believe there's been a development and we have news that they have signed with an NFL agency, I'm right in saying.
Yeah, just speaking to that agent, in communication with that agent today, Charlie Smith, Rory Began and Dara Leader have all signed with ProSport, a ProStar sports agency in the US. It's run by a guy called Paul Sheehy. Paul is a sports agent. He's maybe 20 years experience in the business, and he represents a 70 clients. That includes athletes, coaches and management personnel as well. So he's very well versed in the business. I think he's a qualified legal professional. He published Alter, frequent guests on the media in the US as well. And it's big news, really. It's a sign that our lads are going places. Now, I don't have any development on Mark Jackson at the minute, it's certainly for the likes of Began and Smith and Dara Leader. Dara is a former Connacht rugby player, and he's a brother of Tig, who runs Leader Kicking. He's the guy that orchestrated these trials for the lads to get over there. This is a big, big development. And, you know, for them to sign with Paul Sheehy, who's a resident in Colorado, it shows that the trend is going in the right direction. And at the end of the day, the last word we got was that the scouts were impressed with the lads, and they were asked, rather than flying home, they were asked to stay around in Florida. And my information, Shane, is that on March the 20th, they will compete at another combine. It's kind of a Pro Bowl event in Florida. And again, you're putting the boys back in the shop window. They've had nearly another 3 weeks practicing. I think they've had serious discussions with NFL clubs. The fact that if, you know, three of them have an agent at this stage has to be a positive sign. And basically, I've asked Paul to keep us up to date with the latest developments, and it's just another little twist in the road, Shane. It's maybe a journey that we were hearing about maybe for the last 4 months, but they're closer now than they ever were before. And it's a massive sacrifice for the lads as well. You might say it's all worth it in the end, potentially, but, you know, Rory's been training hard for this since November, I think, and I think the lads as well. So they're closing in on what could be the final chapter before a possible new chapter and a new book all over again.
Well, here's hoping for more positive news. That certainly is welcome news to hear those developments. Final story I want to put to you, Damien Lawler, is Croke Park being possibly used as a fan zone for the Europa League. So this is really GAHQ driving on with plans to generate revenue.
Yeah, I'd be interested to get your views on this as well, Shane. I mean, I think there's no doubting that that's if Liverpool get there, I think the idea will certainly spring to mind, and that is principally because of Liverpool's huge following in this country. The event is taking place in the Aviva Stadium, 52,000, and I'm sure you're being plagued like I am for tickets for that. How I'm supposed to get them, I don't know, but you might have a better chance than me. You know, and there's talk that it could be a Liverpool Rangers family or a final, but I think from a GAA perspective, Croke Park would be covered, Shane. That's a crucial thing because it's hosting Springsteen the previous Sunday. And I think Liverpool played a second leg of their last 16, a 4-goal lead over Sparta Prague. And I think this really is just another example of thinking outside the box. And I wonder, are you going to see this like in venues around Ireland too? Because I do believe, Shane, it's only a matter of time before the major GAA stadiums are opened up all across the country to other sports and to other events. I do think that'll come primarily because of the financial pressures on county boards. But if you look at Croke Park alone, they had a fan event there for a recent NFL game. That was very successful. I would imagine you know, in major championships, the fan zone events that they have are very, very successful. We saw that maybe when Ireland were last in the Euros. But I would imagine there'd be a massive crowd in Croke Park now. I'd be very reluctant to put numbers on it. But I think with Liverpool's following and the buzz around the city, and everybody's going to try and get over to Dublin in the hope that they do get a ticket. So there is a kind of a process in place to hold these fan events now. And it's probably just one of a list that the GEA have. And Peter McKenna has a checklist. He's always thinking inside the box. He wants the stadium to be fully carbon neutral by 2050. The old handball centre has been knocked down and there'll be a new entrance there, a massive underground storage. You know, there's a solar farm out in the Knoll and that'll cover all their ESB and energy costs. There's a new hotel in Clonliffe starting in April. The existing Croke Park Hotel is valued around $52 million. So I think this is just another way outside of Gaelic Games, along with the concerts, to generate money, which a lot of it filters back down to grassroots, Shane. And, you know, if you're talking any club or any county board, they'll take anything that's coming down in terms of funding. But that'll be a very, very interesting one. That could be a very, very enjoyable event, certainly if Liverpool qualify with their Irish following here.
Absolutely. Could nearly sell out Croke Park twice over, I would imagine, with Liverpool's following. I see UEFA trying to have contingency plans as well, particularly if it's the Liverpool Rangers final and the large support on the island of Ireland for both teams as well. Listen, Damien, we're going to leave our conversation here. Gentlemen, as always, thanks so much for taking the call.
Thank you, Shane.
Game on.
Ladies football.
Now, it is Wednesday. It's time to chat ladies football. It is time to welcome Nadine Doherty along to the show. Nadine, how's the form?
Great, Shane, and yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. Listen, before we get stuck into the match previews, because there's some really big matches coming up this weekend, a couple of points off the pitch, first off. We touched last week, very briefly now, admittedly, on the player charter agreement, and the fact that the Camogie Association seems to be going off in a bit of a solo run when there's still no white smoke from the LGFA. Were you surprised with that approach, I suppose?
I was and I wasn't, Shane. I suppose I was surprised in one sense that there was an announcement last week so soon after the LGFA had announced that they were in the final stages of, you know, preparing their agreement with their players. I suppose with it, and I suppose I've had a week to think it over and that, you know, there could be a number of elements to it. Obviously, the first thing that springs to mind is, you know, this further strengthens suspicions that relations between the associations are quite distant and that perhaps communication is quite poor, and that announcement would have strengthened that idea that they essentially operate as two completely separate entities. It could also be a case, Shane, that both associations have agreed completely different agreements with their players, and I'd imagine that is likely the case. You know, the LGFA, I suppose, they've always prided themselves of, as maybe being a little bit ahead of Camogie in terms of how they've promoted and developed their game. You know, I know financially there's definitely more funding and sponsorship, so perhaps their players are getting a slightly more significant deal. So I was just surprised, you know, at the announcement, because there's been such a streamlined and united front, in a sense, surrounding integration. You know, and I suppose over the last year or two, we're so used to both associations coming out with press releases together. And again, perhaps that shows and it's an indication of the significance of the role that the GA play in terms of being an intermediary between the two associations in terms of communication and talks. Look, we can interpret it so many different ways, Shane, but not really a surprise in the end up. And perhaps, you know, look, perhaps it was an opportunity missed by both associations to say, you know what, moving forward, we are coming out as a united front and, you know, we're getting used to operating together, but they haven't. But I would sense, and this is a complete guess, that perhaps it's two different agreements, so it would have been two separate announcements anyway. I'm also a little bit surprised, Shane, that we're nearing the end of the round robin of the league and there isn't an agreement in place yet. Officially for the LGFA players. I'm probably more surprised by that, but look, hopefully in the coming weeks that'll all be sorted and the details will be announced.
Yeah, certainly peculiar timing.
Yeah.
That is a very fair point you make. So that was a big announcement last week. More recent, equally big, some would argue, certainly if you were from Cork. Cork football have been hit with a couple of notable retirements, and probably most notably, 8-time All-Ireland winner Ciara O'Sullivan.
Yeah, and I suppose timing is everything, Shane, isn't it? And it's more of a blow from the outside anyway to us looking in when Cork are bottom of the league. And I suppose over the last number of years, we've been used to Ciara O'Sullivan, Dúran O'Sullivan, her sister, and Róisín Phelan, three players, three legends of Cork football who announced their retirement this week. We've been used to them coming into the Cork panel for the championship. It's really disappointing for Cork because I would have felt, you know, I mean, they're still young. I think Ciara O'Sullivan's 33. You would have feel that they all have a huge amount of football left to play. But I think with Ciara, she has suffered with injuries over the last number of years and decided to call it a day. And Dúran also, you know, I think she had hamstring troubles over the year. But I mean, Róisín Phelan has been really a constant and a real presence for Cork, and probably a very understated player at times. She'd always slot in there, fullback, cornerback. Over the years, she did really good, you know, one-on-one marking roles on the top stars of the game. But it's very disappointing for Cork. In another sense, Shane, you know, in the long term, so they might be looking at it in a sense that Cork now know that their league players, I suppose their squad for the league is going to be the same for the championship, and they're not going to be left in a position whereby we see them playing completely different football for the league. It changes to a completely format for the championship because they are accommodating these players coming back. So it's time for them to build, it definitely is, and time for them to really look for the future. And they need new leaders coming through, Shane, because they are struggling, but there are leaders in Cork, because when you have, I suppose, that tradition that they have, there are definitely leaders there somewhere, and they're just really going to have to step up now. But listen, those three players, oh, Cork, absolutely nothing. I think between them, they perhaps have about 15 All-Star awards and over 10 All-Ireland. So, I mean, it's an incredible record from three players. But as we're used to the Cork rates, if you go down through the years, I mean, most of them who've retired in the last 10 years have the same resume. So they've been a credit. They've been phenomenal.
Absolute ridiculous numbers in the most positive sense of the word ridiculous. That leads us on to the first match of the weekend, the only match on Saturday in Division 1A. Cork are going to have it all to do away to Dublin.
Yeah, seriously. And just to note, I suppose, you know, it's in St. Clair's and in DCU. And again, it's not a county ground. And, you know, Dan Caldwell from Mayo spoke out this week about the double headers. And I think she indicated that there could have been three double headers for the Mayo ladies and men. Both opportunities missed in one sense. But we don't know the background, Shane. You know, a lot of the time it's the GA who gets the fingers pointed that they won't accommodate them. I don't know if it's a way forward, the double headers, because if you look over attendances, they haven't been that prolific coming in for the women's matches beforehand. And I think the campaign at the minute, the little campaign, is definitely the way to go, that, you know, perhaps we do have to start promoting the games on their own as standalone fixtures. But I would just feel that, and I've said this before about DCU St. Clair's, just in terms of parking, and, you know, there's no stand, there isn't anything there, basically a fence, and Dublin attracts huge crowds, so it's just unfortunate that it's there. But look, it's there for a reason. But in terms of the football, it's very hard for me anyway to see anything other than a Dublin win. I think Cork would have to come up with something extraordinary to get a result this weekend. Dublin themselves, I suppose, haven't been overly impressive. There's been, for me, it's kind of been a lack of consistency to their play during games. You know, they're grinding out results and they've been consistent in that sense. It hasn't been pretty, but they're wins nonetheless. But they're in the best possible position, Shane. Like, they've used up to 30 players, I'd say. They've experimented with positions and personnel, and they're third in a very competitive Division 1 and in with the chance of making a league final. And I don't think it'll bother them too much if they make a league final or not, but when the opportunity is there for them now with two games to go, they will be doing their best to do it. And look, with Cork, we've said it before, you know, in attack, it's really where they're struggling. Like, defensively, in fairness to them, and they really got it together last weekend against Mayo. They only conceded 9 points, but they just couldn't put anything together up front. You know, they've only, I think, over the five games, they've only conceded 1-6 in three of them. But then it was against Kerry and Waterford the last few days with 2-12, 2-14. So they've struggled in that regard, and it's just starting to slip. But I just don't know, Shane. You know, I was watching some of the matches there at the weekend, the O'Connor Cup and the Donaghy Cup and Lynch Cup. And, like, UCC made it to the O'Connor Cup final, which is the top competition in college football. And, you know, the level that O'Connor Cup is played at. It's nearly like senior inter-county level. And I think UCC had six of the Cork panel on their panel, on their team. And they narrowly lost that final to DCU. You know, Ellie Jack, fabulous young footballer, kicked 1-4 in the semi-final. So you're just wondering, Shane, where is it going wrong? Like, why are these players not having an impact yet at senior level? But look, they have Dublin this weekend and next weekend, you know, they have Meath. So it's very hard to see where they're going to get points at all.
So that one throws in at 4:30, as you mentioned, in DCU St. Clair's. We don't know the ins and outs, but it is only a stone's throw from Parnell Park. But however, 4:30 on Saturday. Three matches in Division 1 on Sunday, the first of which is a 1 p.m. throw-in, which sees top of Division 1, 5 wins from 5, travel to Mayo, Nadine.
Yeah, and we spoke at length about Armagh last weekend and the influence of Caroline O'Hanlon and Amy Mackin. But for Mayo, I suppose it's a bigger game for Mayo because, you know, Armagh are basically in a final. They just need, I think, a draw and they'll mathematically be true. But with Mayo, they could still be relegated and they need one more win just to be safe. So the pressure I feel is on them because next weekend they're away to Waterford, Shane, and that could be a relegation playoff depending on how this weekend goes. It'd be hard to see anything other than an Armagh win, but home advantage for Mayo can be huge for them. You know, they're a very resilient team, Shane, and I think the middle third will be a huge battle this weekend, and I think it'll be really entertaining. You know, Aoife Geraghty, very mobile young footballer from Mayo in the middle of the field, probably be tasked with Mark and Caroline O'Hanlon. If Fiona McHale is fit, she could be out there in the mix. Catherine Sullivan, Lauren McConville. Like, it'll be feisty enough, I'd say, now in the middle of third. And it'll definitely be a good game to watch. And look, we spoke about Amy Mackin last weekend. Another huge player for them, Shane, I feel up front at the minute, is Karina Doyle. She's been a revelation for Armagh this year. She's added huge pace to their attack. And she's created a huge amount of openings for Mackin. You know, she draws players and she leaves the space inside for Mackin. So she's been amazing. And I think with Mayo, no more than Cork, I think Mayo up front have struggled a little bit. There's outsider Sinead Caffrey and Sinead Walsh. It's hard to see players who would merit, you know, a one-on-one marking job. So I think if they get their forward play right this weekend and they're able to nullify Amy Mackin inside, they'd be in with a slight chance, but I think it would be a huge task for them, just going on the form of both teams.
Okay, so as I mentioned, that is a 1 p.m. throw-in in Ballinas Stephenites. The only game in Division 1A that is being played in the county ground, actually, Pearce Stadium, Galway versus Waterford, 3 p.m. Two teams that are going to be looking over their shoulders to avoid the drop, so there's a bit of jeopardy in this one.
Absolutely, Shane. That's probably the biggest game on the weekend in terms of, you know, things being on the line. As we spoke, like Galway, they're on a bit of a resurgence, and I feel because they have that bit of momentum built from the result last 2 weeks ago and their performance the week before, and home advantage, I feel they hold a slight upper hand. In terms of personnel as well, up front, in comparison to Waterford, they have a range of scoring threats. You know, there's Shauna Hayes and Aoife O'Rourke who've added an extra option this year. For me, Alva Davern has been incredible for Galway. You know, she's been their mainstay. She was playing club football with Kilmacud Croke, Shane, and she's probably been on the go for 12 to 15 months without a break, and you would not think that by watching that girl get up and down the pitch. So she's been unreal. I feel at Waterford, I suppose, their biggest strength, which they'll bring again against Galway, would be their physical presence, and they'll try and frustrate Galway. You know, they'll stop runners like Dively and Nicola Ward. I do expect a physical game, but I think with Galway, as I said, they have that momentum now. If they win, it'll be phenomenal because they'll be well out of that relegation zone. Again, if Waterford win, it'll be the same thing. So there's a lot on the line with this. I feel whichever team wins that fixture will stay up. I think they'll avoid the drop.
Okay, so a lot on the line in Galway. Same time, throwing in at 3 p.m. in Ashburn, Meath and Kerry. A match that recent past, we might be calling this an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, an All-Ireland or a league final, absolutely. And ironically, it's probably the game of the weekend that has very little at stake. Mathematically, Meath are still in with the chance of making a final. I don't think that would be their focus. Kerry, I suppose, they've dropped 5 points out of possible 6 over the last 2 games, but Kerry have taken a more relaxed approach to the league this year, Shane. I think they finally learned from the last 2 seasons that, you know, really going hell for leather in the league and expecting to maintain and carry on that fitness throughout a very competitive Munster Championship into an All-Ireland series is almost impossible. They've used the league like Dublin this year. They've a lot of new players in, a lot of old faces returning to the league. We've seen very little of Louise Navarro-Hertig and Scanlon around the middle and Kayleigh Cronin. So I think they're playing the long game here, and I think they're right to do so. Should be a good game all the same, because both panels are quite strong. And as you said, you know, there's no love lost between these teams. It's a very hard one to call. I feel if Kerry get a bit of momentum in around the middle of the game, you know, that middle third of the game, I think they'll be able to power through. And if Meath get a little bit of support for Emma Duggan, they'll be in with a bit of a chance. But I just think Kerry probably will have a little bit too much all over the pitch and should squeeze past Meath.
Listen, Nadine Doherty, thank you so much for joining us here on Game On this evening.
Game On.
Ladies football.
Game On.
Camogie.
So from football to Camogie, in Division 1A of the Camogie League is headed for a pulsating conclusion, with weekend results leaving four teams level at the top, separated only by score difference with two rounds remaining. I'm delighted to say that Aoife Murray joins us on the line. And Aoife, let us begin our conversation around one of the results last weekend, and a late goal by Eimear McGrath snatched a stunning 2-10 to 1-10 victory for Tipperary over All-Ireland champions Cork to ensure that five of the six teams participating still have a chance of making the Division 1A final. What did you make of that Tip win over Cork?
Yeah, look, it's funny, you know, actually as a Cork person, I think going into the game I actually was a bit nervous, which I think really is a testament to Tipperary and what they've been building over the last few years. And in fairness, like, it's not often we lose down in Cork. But in fairness to Tipperary, I just thought the confidence that they were bringing in, I felt like if Cork were anyway off, they would be in a bit of trouble. And I, in fairness, they put themselves in a bit of trouble with regard to their wides, some of the shot decisions that they took, dropping the ball in. Like, they scored 10 points, but I think they had about 10 or so wides. So in fairness, Cork kind of put themselves in that situation. But Tipperary have often been in the games where, you know, they put themselves in the position to win it and they've just fallen short. But I think what as a Camogie person, what I took out of that game was a bit like how Tipperary went about their business with regard to Galway and holding on for that that victory, being a player down. You could see it at the weekend that they never went out of the hunt and they kept going to the very end. I think it was a big win from Tipperary in the sense of, maybe they kind of hinted in the Galway game with regard to the confidence and the self-belief and how they're beginning to play their game. But equally, what I think was a hint at maybe where the mentality is going with Tipperary. I think certainly they were very much worth the win, in particularly. And it's not often now when I talk about Cork playing, I don't talk a whole lot about Cork. But I have to say, for Tip, looking at the players they were missing, that they will start to come back into it. Aoife McGrath, Julian Burke, Mary Ryan, Clodagh Quirk, and who knows, maybe caught the van. Look, I always say every year, I hope she comes back, because I think she's an absolute outstanding player. I think she's a joy to watch. Look, fingers crossed she comes back. We always said we were retired long enough, so it'd be great to see her back. Like, Dennis Kelly's in a great position. He's going to have such a headache, and I would imagine as a manager, that's exactly what you want. So look, I thoroughly enjoyed seeing Tip mentally fight it out and get that win in the end.
Yeah, two big wins for Tip now after that round one defeat to Waterford. No doubt it's just a minor blip for Cork. Speaking of Cork, Waterford bounced back from losing to Cork a fortnight ago by defeating Clare 2-16-8 points at Farr Field. A result that leaves them plus 14 on score difference, top of Division 1A as it stands, albeit just on score difference. But Waterford, they're flying at the moment.
They are, and look, I think it's great to see Waterford top of the table of the league, breaking, I suppose, what they would have had as their ceiling at regard to the semi-final last year. Okay, final did not go their way, but what I like them sitting at the top of the league now is maybe they've taken so many lessons out of what it is actually like to take part in an All-Ireland final. And I think, like a lot of teams say, that, oh, we can win an All-Ireland. That cauldron of going into a final, like the mental stress and toll that it takes, it's great to see them bouncing back from that and sitting on top of the table. Okay, we've only got three rounds, there's two more to go, but that's not a bad position to be in. And I think from the weekend, what you could really start to see was maybe how they're beginning to shape up as what are Tipperary Camogie, how they're going to play. And certainly, I think you could see that running style. I think Clare stayed in the game a little bit, but once Waterford started their running game, in particular getting Lorraine Bray on the ball, look, for the last number of years, she probably nearly my player of the match for every time Waterford goes out, but getting her on the ball from that mid, unfortunately Clare just didn't have the defensive structure, and I think the ability to stop that running game, and it paid huge dividends for Waterford.
Finally, if it just briefly, it is interesting to see what we've learned from teams after three rounds. So what did we learn from Galway's win over Kilkenny?
Look, I think in fairness it was a fairly cagey first half, right? And I don't think anybody really learned a whole lot about either team. But in fairness, what you could see from Galway was when they turn it on, by God, can they turn it on, right? And I think going up 1-5 uncontested from Kilkenny, and then they just closed out. They completely squeezed Kilkenny. They didn't allow them back into the game. And I think for me, that is the bit that you could see. When Galway click, it's going to be so hard to stop them. But I just had that little question mark of getting them to click and getting them to click for longer, because I just still haven't seen many new players coming through. I still, they're really reliant on Aoife O'Donoghue and Carey Dolan. Okay, seeing a few others come through, but I worry that they won't click for as long in the game for them to really, I suppose, get back into either the league final or get back into the All-Ireland later in the year. But certainly, once they turn it on, they are very hard to live with.
Absolutely. It's great to see competitiveness in Division 1A. Mm. Not much to separate the sides. Aoife Murray, thanks so much for taking the call. No matches this weekend for St. Patrick's weekend. They're back on the 23rd of March. Very briefly, Raf Diallo, we were hoping Chidozie Ogbeni was going to start for Luton. Is he starting?
Yeah, he is starting, yeah. Just behind the striker. And also Mark Travers is on the bench for Bournemouth.
Happy days. That is the Irish team news in the Premier League match this evening. Now it's time to announce the name of the lucky person that's going into Friday's draw for that amazing AXA prize. Massive congratulations to Jennifer Byrne, who correctly told us that Katie McKay plays for Arsenal Women. And the good news for everyone else is there's another chance to enter on tomorrow's show. Beto da Silva is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. Massive thanks to Andrew, Raff and Laura Lee for working on this evening's show. From all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.